Welcome to Ripstop on the Record, the podcast for makers, by makers, where we talk about all things MYOG. Brought to you by Ripstop by the Roll.
I think it's good, right?
Yeah, I think that was a good take.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Ripstop on the Record. I'm Jameson.
And I'm Isaac.
And I'm Carter.
No, you're not.
You're a smart guy. Couldn't get one past you. In this episode, we will be talking about XPAC, specifically about what happened to kind of the prominence that they once knew, why this material seems to be losing some market share. Plus, we're going to talk about some things that you may not actually know. Despite what it might sound like off the bat, we think that it might be maybe an underrated product, and there are a lot of things that people don't understand about this that might put it bring it back to some of the limelight that we think it deserves.
Back on your radar.
Exactly. There's been some new stuff out there. We'll talk about all that soon. But first, a few updates.
Yeah, make sure that you go and check out the new colored zipper tape and zipper sliders. There are, I believe, 5 new colors of number 3 YKK Eurotech zipper. So I've made a bunch of stuff with it already, and they look awesome. So
blaze orange, coyote brown.
Yep.
Brown. Sorry. Neon. Brown. Moroccan blue.
Yep. Neon. Olive drab.
Yep. Yeah. Good colors. Go check them out. Also, I did want to talk about one of the things that you made recently, just because I kind of like plugging some of the new stuff that we're making. So can you tell me about your new pack?
Yeah, so I recently downloaded a pattern from Stitchback Gear. I say downloaded, but I purchased a pattern.
And then downloaded it,
yeah. It's called the DL, or the Daylight Pack.
The download.
Yeah. So it's essentially a super lightweight, simple, very lightweight pack,
It's like a packable pack, right? It's the one that you can like keep in your duffel bag pack, for when you get to a destination.
That's what I was trying to think of. But yeah, I made it because I wanted to have exactly what you just said, something that I could use, like turn it inside out, use it as a stuff sack, and then when I get to wherever I'm going, I can just use it as a very lightweight day pack. So yeah, it turned out really good. Made a couple of them. First one made with 210D grid stop. And then the second one I made with 2.2 hex 70
PU.
PU.
Yeah. I like that. Use the 2.2 hex 70. I haven't worked with that material in quite some time, but it's definitely a sleeper for like the ultralight packs and bags and stuff like that. Sure. It's a good looking material as well.
Yeah. The one mistake I did was use the PU coated 2.2 for the drawstring. Also, it is quite sticky, so it doesn't drawstring very well. It
doesn't draw very well.
Yeah.
Makes sense. Yeah, check out that pattern. Also, we're going to be releasing, it's not really releasing a pattern. I just made this wallet the other day off of some inspiration that I had looking at some EDC wallets. So keep your eye out on Instagram for that. There's going to be a free downloadable instruction, if you will. We don't have any, this is not like an official pattern. We don't really have the rights to this design at all. We just figured that if we're going to post a reel, then I'll help you guys out. I threw together a little PDF that I had to help me with. So if you want to see that wallet, check it out. You can probably make it with 2.2 hex 70.
Yeah.
As always, like, comment, rate, subscribe, review. Go check it out on YouTube. If you want to watch us talk about XPAC, you can look at Isaac and my wonderful faces and his great stash and my lack of any facial hair whatsoever. Let's get on to the episode.
Let's do it.
All right, Isaac, we're here into the meat and potatoes of the episode. Glad Carter's not here. He would have kicked me under the table here. So let's talk about XPAC. And the kind of the question I keep having in my head is what happened to XPAC? Not really in any bad way, but like, why isn't it as prominent as it sort of once was? And so I want to talk about that. So why do you think we've seen a decrease in the usage of XPAC over the last couple of years?
Yeah, well, first off, I think it's a mixture of a couple things. First off, I think it is largely because of shiny object syndrome. You know, a lot of new cool things have come out recently in the pack fabric and outdoor fabric world. And I think that has kind of distracted from XPAC, which has largely been around since, we'll talk about this more later, but I think since the 50s,
well,
maybe 60s. But yeah. And then on top of that, I think that XPAC has been adopted more by larger companies. So like, you're definitely seeing more XPAC in like EDC gear and some like hard use gear. I know Mountain Hardware has some XPAC packs. Swift Industries is making a lot with XPAC. Yeah, I think a lot more larger companies, mainstream companies, have started adopting XPAC. And so maybe because of that, some smaller cottage companies are like trying to go the opposite direction.
Yeah, it makes sense. So it's maybe sort of like shiny object syndrome. New products have come out in the market, so people are kind of interested in those. But also, I guess what I hear you saying for the second point is like it's just not in our purview very much. Like it's just not on our Instagram feeds.
Yeah,
it's not showing up in the places that we're looking at, which is like largely backpacking, hiking, yeah, through hiking, that kind of stuff.
Yeah,
that makes sense. So a question I've seen a lot from people is kind of curiosity, being like, I don't see these companies working with XPAC anymore. Is there like a quality issue? You've met with Taylor North from DP in the last year. Like, do you know of any like quality stuff that's been going on with them? Or is it really just like kind of those points that you mentioned earlier?
Definitely not. Like I've never heard of, you know, XPAC having like delamination issues or like finding bugs in their lamination. Like I've personally never heard of any issues like that. It could be out there. I've just never heard of them.
Sure. I mean, they produce, I don't know, millions of yards of fabric. Don't quote me on that, but like they produce a lot of fabric. I'm sure there are bugs, hypothetical bugs, but yeah, large, like not like some sort of mass issue where like people are leaving because of.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, okay.
And I think on the contrary, like XPAC and Dimension Polyant as a whole, they've done a lot of work kind of in the background, kind of on the DL, as we talked about
daylight pack.
No, down low this time.
Okay,
but they've done a lot of work towards making a lot of their products climate neutral. And I think that's not as sexy of a term as like fully recycled or some of these other like buzzwords that people use to describe fabrics. But yeah, DP's made that, so they do what they call their clean tech program, which is, you know, 100% climate neutral. And from their website, it says clean tech products are 100% climate neutral and contain recycled, bio-based, or sustainably sourced materials. And 9 of their products currently are fully clean tech certified. So, and that, like, that's a lot of their super popular ones, which are like VX21, VX42, VX03, which we don't sell, but is also a really cool fabric. So yeah, a lot of their products, a lot of their main sellers are fully climate neutral and in some cases, like fully recycled also.
Interesting. Yeah. Cause the elephant in the room, well, there's a couple things you need to bring up. One, this is in no way like a paid ad for XPAC. They're not sponsoring this podcast. We're talking about it because we want to talk to the MYOG industry about things that are happening in the industry, and just makers and companies in general. So not a paid ad. Second of all, we're not representing anybody. So like, this is not a response or like, not a stab or anything to the big companies, which for the most part, everyone knows of the big three, as in Fabrics with Dyneema or DCF, and you know, the Dyneema group, XPAC or Challenge. And the big elephant in the room here, the second point I'm trying to make, is that one of the things that Challenge has done really well, on top of making phenomenal materials that have been great in the market and really well received, is that they've marketed their eco story maybe better than XPAC has.
Yeah, they've definitely marketed it better. And yeah, I think another part of that also is XPAC has a lot of fully made in the U.S. fabric options also, which I don't think a lot of people know that. But they do a lot of, I think almost all of their lamination in
Putnam, Connecticut.
Yeah, Connecticut. That's the word I was looking for. One of those New England.
They're all pretty
territories
tiny,
up there, you know. But yeah, they do almost all their lamination in the U.S. and then some of their products are fully U.S. made also. So
I want to touch on something more that you mentioned a few minutes ago, which is this idea that cottage companies don't seem to be using it, but large brands are. I feel like that's different from how I normally think of cottage brands. Like cottage brands are really innovative with their designs of their product, and they can get really specific on how they design them because only a certain type of person is buying a natural pack. You know, like it's not an REI bag because not everyone can use a natural pack effectively and use it to its best potential. But I normally think of the materials that cottage companies use as following trends from bigger brands. I guess I have two questions here. One, is that true? Or like, do you normally see cottage companies kind of going on a limb on trying stuff? And also like, why are big companies trusting XPAC, but cottage companies, maybe trusting is not the right word, but why do they seem to be moving away from it?
Yeah. Well, obviously, I don't own a cottage company, so I can't speak for all of them. But I mean, just looking at the way that, you know, I learned about how like forecasting and production times and all that kind of stuff takes into play for producing a textile good. Like for small cottage companies, I think they have a whole lot more flexibility when it comes to their forecasting, sorry. Because they're not making like thousands of packs at a time, right? Sure. They're not sending materials and the tech pack and all that stuff to a cut and sew manufacturer to have like 20,000 packs made at once that then need to be sent to like all of the REIs in the country. Yeah. Like they're making a good number of packs and a good number of things at one time, but I think it's much easier for them to say, okay, you know, this X pack, this certain variant of X pack was great for this pack, but now I'm really interested in trying this other variant of, you know, fabric that recently came out. So I just want to get some of that and make my next round of packs with it. So yeah, I think their flexibility to shift a little bit is much easier than a larger company. I think we see that a lot with like Durston Gear, right? Yeah. Like his packs have used, I think you mentioned this the other day, like all of his packs have used like the most well-known fabrics.
Yeah. Every single one of them now, even like the newest pack is using the Alula, is it called? Yeah. So he's now used X pack in his first bag, yep. At least in one of his first bags, Dyneema, Ultra, and Alula now,
yep.
Or Dyneema in his tents at least. So yeah, he's run the gamut there.
Yeah. And then on the other side of that, like I think a lot of cottage makers are always like pushing the boundaries for weight, like weight savings. And this is specifically speaking for like pack manufacturers, but I think a lot of them are pushing for the lightest material, the best material that they can get their hands on. And traditionally we haven't seen X-Pack produce like the lightest weight fabrics. Like VX03, I think is their lightest weight fabric, and it's like 3 point something ounces per square yard.
Okay. So it's like marginally heavier than your Ultra 100 or 292 DCO.
Yeah.
Gotcha. Yeah, that's a good point. I guess that makes me think also that I'm taking, this is a personal opinion for everyone listening in terms of how I see some of these materials, but cottage companies are making something, like I said earlier, for a very small group of people, like a very niche market of users,
yeah.
Where these large companies have to be able to produce something that for the most part, if anybody buys it, it's going to function. They're not going to get customer service complaints.
Right.
And you can choose more specific materials if you can make for one specific application.
Yeah.
So would you, is that a, I guess what I'm saying there is a lot of the X-Pack materials are extremely utilitarian, where like VX07 is an ultralight pack fabric, but it has, I think, a 50D woven backing. It's a 4-layer material. Like it has a very robust construction method for being an ultralight material where you have less to think about versus something like a 292 DCF, which is an amazing pack material, but you have to utilize it very correctly, even as a user, to get the most out of it.
Yeah. I mean, there's definitely much less customer education that has to go into stuff like that when you're using slightly heavier materials. And I think from like larger brands' perspectives, it's easier for them to just put stuff in stores and sell it rather than like sure. Putting a lot of work into in-depth customer education and like,
yeah,
you know, ensuring that yeah. Their customers know how to treat their products properly.
Because they can't, like, you can't control the customer education process if you're going to be placed in a bunch of stores.
Right. It
doesn't mean they're not amazing packs, but you're just going to approach that very differently, I guess.
I think someone like Carter or us, or, you know, like someone who is really interested in like the most ultralight.
The right tool for the job.
The right tool for the job. Yeah. Like we're going to like specifically research the product that we're buying. Right.
Yeah.
We're going to look at, you know, 292 or whatever material it is in question, say, okay, these are its strengths, these are its weaknesses. This is how I need to treat it differently than if I were, you know, throwing on a 1,000 e-quarter a rucksack on my back and like, I don't know, drifting through the Rockies or something.
Through the Rockies. Name yeah. of your next autobiography.
Yeah. Drifting through the Rockies.
I don't know how you're going to end up in the Rockies, but we'll get there later. So that's like the cottage company side. What about DIYers? I don't have any sales data pulled up in front of me right now, but that's still a material that's widely loved by a lot of people, but it's not showing up to the same extent that it once was in the hands of DIYers. Why do you think that is?
Yeah, I mean, honestly, partially, again, I think it's the shiny object syndrome. Sure. Ripstop by the Roll has done a great job of providing, you know, new materials and the latest materials to DIYers.
That was a very slight pat on the back for yourself.
Yeah, thanks to thanks to the products team in large part. You know, I know they do a lot of work and they're really great at their jobs. But anyways, but
great looking guys too.
Yeah, I would honestly be interested in hearing what you know, what our listeners have to say about that. Like, what are your thoughts? What do you think about XPAC and maybe why it hasn't been used as much recently?
Yeah, that would be interesting to see. Drop us a message, Instagram, YouTube, or customer service. Let us know what about XPAC you like or dislike, and maybe we'll dispel some of those fears or inspire you in a new way. So there's a chance that there are people listening that may not know the full XPAC line or the best applications for these things. We've probably instilled a lot of questions about what XPAC is and what it isn't now in this first part of the episode. So I sort of want to lay it out there for people now that may not know the entire product line stuff. So let's talk about the lines first. Okay. They break it down into three lines: X3, X4, and Lightskin. Can you explain what those lines are, what some of the most popular materials are in those lines, and then we'll talk about applications after.
Yep. So the X3 line, which consists of a lot of really good fabrics. Probably the main ones that our customers would be familiar with would be the RX line. So like RX15, RX30, and RX36. I think, and X50.
Some of my favorites.
Yeah. We also sell X50. So the X3 product line is basically a woven face, then the X-ply, which is at 33 degrees. And then you have an exposed film backing.
I'm just kind of thrown off by the 33 degrees. It's been like cemented in my head that it's 22 degrees for XPAC. I'm kind of thrown off.
Hold on. Let me make sure I'm saying that.
It's 22.
Is it really?
Yeah. It's the same as the other ones, right?
Yeah.
Man, Isaac. We just talked up the products team a whole lot, and then you pulled this.
33 degrees for them.
I can actually see it. It's like, you know, the same number, 2233. Okay, I feel way better knowing that's 22 degrees. So basically film back with X with a woven face. It's got the X ply in there. That makes sense. So X3 meaning three layer. So what's different about the X4 line?
So the X4 line also has, you know, those three layers to begin with, but then it just has a woven polyester backing. In most cases, it's polyester.
So that's stuff like VX07, VX15, VX21. I guess V21RS would fall into that category, but that's a custom RBTR fabric, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I can't remember the whole backstory with that one.
That predates both of us.
Yeah, that predates both of us, but I'm pretty sure Carter and maybe Kyle worked with DP to develop something that would be better for printing and, you know, potentially reduce abrasion resistance because it doesn't have like the raised ridges from the X-ply.
Yeah, that's a great point. I want to touch on the taffeta backing that the X4 fabrics have. So stitch elongation is a conversation I've had a lot recently. This past week, we've been talking with our maker sponsors that we've chosen. Keep an eye out for those people. Really stoked to see what they make. But we're talking about all sorts of fabrics and things. And a lot of people asked about Ultra 100 and film back materials and things like that, which brings up a conversation that a lot of people have with laminate materials, and normally that means ones that have film backings. For novices out there, can you explain why a woven backing helps with stitch elongation and overall kind of stitch retention?
Yeah, so when you have the exposed film backing, now keep in mind, like with all laminates, instead of having basically like a loose woven fiber structure, you have more of a rigid structure. Okay. And because it's a laminate, it makes it more like paper in some ways. So when you stitch through a laminate fabric, you're going to have holes from the needle, and that taffeta backing or the backing on, you know, other backed laminate fabrics just helps to add another layer to stabilize both the film as well as like add some strength to the holes that you're creating in that fabric.
Because the paper is a good example, because it is like a perforated edge or whatever. Like that's what you're doing with the needle holes.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's, you know, paper's not the best example because it's a million times stronger the material is a million times stronger than paper, but it's like putting tape holes over that, because then it gives it all that lateral and I guess unilateral structure in all the directions, where it just solidifies the holes, basically. Yeah. Solidifies probably on the right word. That makes sense.
Stabilizes
the holes. Thank you. So let's talk about applications again for maybe the more novice people. When would you want to use a film backed material versus one that maybe has a woven back?
So I think we typically use film backed fabrics in applications where we really want more water resistance. And that's because you can tape those fabrics. You can use like our Dyneema repair tape, or you can use the PET repair tape, or you can use the Ultra, what do they call their tape?
Oh, TNT tape.
TNT tape, yeah. And then not only does that stabilize that perforation in the laminate material, but it also waterproofs it, right? So it covers those holes, makes it so that you can't get any water coming through those holes. And then with a backed or a four-layer laminate, I would say those are best for situations where taping isn't necessarily what you want. Like you can bind that and it provides more structure and more support than what taping would.
Yeah, that makes sense. For me, I always need to make sure I acknowledge the fabric privilege that I have here, among other privileges that I possess. Fabric privilege being like, I just make with the fabric that I'm most excited to use, or the one that makes the most sense for the application. So like whether it's film backing or woven back, I just want the best material for the application I want the best material for the application, period, for the most part. So like, I think that binding looks the most professional, but like you said, like if it's about waterproofness, I'm not going to bind a stuff sack. Like that's not, that's not what I'm going to do there. But like, for instance, the RX line is an amazing looking fabric. I have like one of my like travel backpacks has partially made out of RX 36. And I just think that looks awesome. I'd put like a liner. It's like a Sil Poly, like Moroccan blue lining. So it like looks really nice, got a little bit of contrast, but for me, like it's just the aesthetic of it. But again, I can get any fabric I want. That kind of helps.
I think it also, we might be kind of getting into the weeds here, but with film backed fabrics, you can also use that backing to your advantage in the sense of like, you know, if you want to put a reinforcement patch on the inside that has a loop where you can hang your keys, let's say this is a fanny pack or something, you can make that reinforcement patch sew on your loop for the keys, and then you can use double-sided adhesive tape to just stick it anywhere inside that bag or whatever your project is.
Yeah.
So like there's some other applications of the film backing that's not necessarily like, it doesn't have anything to do with the structural integrity of the bag or the waterproofness or anything like that. It's really just convenience.
Yeah.
As well as for like patterning, like if you want to make a no-sew DCF stuff sack, you can do that because of that film that you can use like double-sided adhesives on.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. So we talked about X3, we talked about X4. There's one other product line. One that I'm actually, now that I think about it, sort of confused by, which is the Lightskin line. No, don't mean to be hiding the name. Lightskin. I really like the material. I think it looks awesome, but I do struggle to find the best application for it. So I guess before you get an application, tell me about what the construction method is.
Yeah, so
Lightskin.
The Lightskin is similar to the four-layer construction. It just has a woven face fabric with some really cool coatings and stuff on it, and then it has a polyester film layer, and then it has the woven backing. So just doesn't have the X-ply that some of the other lines have.
Gotcha. The reason that I really like this one is it had like a really cool like tech like heathered gray face. Mm-hmm. Like it doesn't come in any colors. It's just like this. Every Lightskin looks a little bit different because it's like a heather gray where there's no, I don't think there's a particular rhyme or reason to like there's no pattern. It's just like this like slate gray.
Yeah,
kind of. And it looks really cool.
I'm sure that our friend Taylor North could tell us exactly what gives it its appearance.
Yeah.
But I don't know that off the top of my head.
Yeah, we should probably dive into this now that I think about it. I have used Lightskin before. I made a garment bag out of Lightskin because I thought it looked really nice and I just wanted the garment bag to look really good. I've made some other stuff, but whenever I get my hands on that material, I am kind of like, I guess I'm just a little bit lost. Like, this looks awesome. What's the best use case here? I want something more rigid because it is a very, even the LS21 is a pretty, it's a very like pliable, what's a better word? Like wavy material. Like it doesn't have a ton of rigidity and a ton of structure, which is great in certain applications. But when you're looking at packs and bags, like something like RX36 or VX21 is going to have a lot more rigidity and kind of give you a shape of a bag, where Lightskin won't offer that too much.
Yeah, I think the difference for us also is a lot of times when we're making packs, we're not lining them. Whereas with like a lot of more larger scale, like commercial backpacks, in most situations they're lined and have multiple layers.
Sure.
So I think that more pliable, like lighter attribute is good in some ways.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, because I guess when I think about the popular applications of Lightskin that I've seen some packs, but really ultralight packs, and then I've seen the opposite of what you're talking about, like EDC travel bags, maybe not EDC, but like very travel centric, like like airport travel type bags, where they just want like a really clean, like tech looking, like think of the aesthetic from like Boundary and Air and Alpaca gear, like that kind of aesthetic. Like I've seen them in applications like that, and those are all companies that use other versions of XPAC in their projects as well.
Yeah.
So let's talk about applications now. Sometimes, like Lightskin, people can find difficulty in the best application for XPAC materials. So what are some of the things that you made with XPAC, and why did you choose that material?
Man, I've made quite a few projects with XPAC. First and foremost, I think my first few projects that I worked on with XPAC were our X50 in Woodland, simply because it was Woodland camo.
Because you're the only one of us that would have used it.
Yeah, and I love Woodland camo. So, I've made quite a few things with that. One of my favorite was I made a rifle sleeve for when I go canoeing. And it's basically like a rifle scabbard with like a roll top closure to make it somewhat waterproof. And it's worked out pretty well. Haven't lost any of my rifles at the bottom of a lake or anything. So,
I mean, they just repel water. They don't float, do they?
Well, I mean, since it's watertight, it holds air.
So you just blow it up, make it into like a floaty?
Yeah.
That'd be wild.
I mean, I wouldn't trust that, but.
Yeah. It wouldn't be a PFD, but
yeah.
Anyway, what else have you made?
Let's see. So all the bags that I made for my truck, like underneath the seat, the storage stuff, all that I've made with XPAC. I recently made I don't think I showed you this yet, but I made a document folio out of a newer XPAC fabric that don't know if I can talk about yet.
Blink if it's the one I think it is. Oh, wow.
Yeah.
We'll talk about that later.
Yep. So, can you think of any other?
I can think about what I've made. I don't know about what you made.
Yeah. I know I've made some like bike bags and stuff too with XPAC, but.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, when I first started working here, some of the very first things I made were with XPAC because there was a lot of like misprinted colors or colors that were slight, like a shade off from what people were looking for. And I nabbed those, Carter gave them to me, and I just started sewing a ton. So like my first frame bag was made out of XPAC VX07, like olive drab kind of color. Made some early backpacks, a burrito bag on one of my bikes. Actually, this is one of my favorite bags, even though it's one of the earliest ones. So on my... The first like nice bike that I got was a Fuji Cross Pro, and I got it on Craigslist, and it's a cyclocross bike. So the bottle positions are a little bit different from most bikes. Like most bikes, the bottle positions are really down in the triangle, kind of near like the cranks. And this one has a space that is like 4 inches across, 3 inches down, and 3 inches tall, kind of. It's like this little triangle, and I made a bag to fit in there. Just that sits really in between there. It is, because it's completely, like you wouldn't recognize it at all. No one looks there, no one assumes it's there, but I can fit an inner tube, a multi-tool, tire levers, and a patch kit in there. So it's like most everything you need for your bike is just like sits down there. So that one's made at XPAC. That one's super cool. But more recently, some of the stuff that I really like that I made with XPAC, and I chose XPAC for a reason, not just because like it was just available at the shop. I made my fly fishing pack out of XPAC. That one was interesting. I just hadn't worked with XPAC in a while. I really wanted to. I wanted a specific color. I wanted like the rhino color.
Yeah.
But I also really wanted like good abrasion resistance. And I guess I did specifically choose it for that, but also I wanted I just wanted to work with XPAC, I guess, a little bit as well. Yeah. That one I lined with DCF, actually, because I wanted it tapeable as well. But like, I really wanted the rhino color, not just to be black. Like, yeah. Fly fishing, predominantly summer around here, at least when I go, I don't have waders. So it's often hot. I didn't really want like a black pack sitting on my chest. So like the rhino gray, I thought would look good. Great abrasion resistance, great performance. VX07, so it's lightweight. All around. So yeah, but I put DCF on the inside of that so I could tape it, because I had like Molly going across the front. So I really wanted to build tape everything, and I wanted the backing. So that the fly fishing pack, it's like a chest rig. I also get a note of fly fishing bags that don't have water bottle pockets. I made that one that has like a water bottle sleeve. It has like Molly attachments for everything. And then I made like a separate attachment that goes on the left side. So like the zipper goes from, it's like a zipper goes up one side and over the top. And then the other side is closed off because that's where I have like my phone, wallet, and keys. Cause I also got nervous taking out, like pulling out my fly box and just like throwing my keys in the river or something.
Yeah. Yeah. I was going to say, I remember one other project that I really enjoyed doing, which was for the Community Maker Challenge.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Was that like 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think so.
I used, excuse me, RX36, and I think my challenge for that was that I couldn't use webbing.
Yeah.
So like all the like pull tabs and anywhere that you would normally use webbing.
Binding.
Binding.
Closure, strap.
You
had to make a sling bag with no webbing. That was the, right?
Yep. I basically cut strips of UVX40 and sewed that into webbing for all of us.
I just remembered today that we no longer carry UVX40. I got kind of sad.
Yeah.
It made sense. Not very many people want a material that burly, because that was UHMWPE with like two woven, like woven face and woven back.
Yeah,
laminate, every fabric innovation you could think of made sense. Not very many ultra backpackers want like a 10.5 ounce material that's ridiculously burly.
Yeah,
but it was cool.
I think it's like 8 point something, but ounces per square yard. You know,
well, I'm going to test you on this later. So far, your track record today is not great.
No.
Cool. All right. So I think we talked about application stuff. So largely, packs, bags, reinforcement areas. I think I have a duffel made out of RX30. I have a lot of backpacks made out of RX30 and RX36. That fabric line specifically, I just really love. Something about all black, I think, I just very much enjoy. Mm-hmm. So yeah, look in that region. If you're looking to make a pack, a duffel bag, a bag, a expedition duffel, climbing bag, stuff like that, bike bag, these are all very common, very popular applications for XPAC materials, where it performs as well as anything else. It's going to look great. There are a lot of good color options. I was about to say something that was going to ruin the next part. So let's talk about what makes XPAC unique. Why you might look at this material or compare it with some of the others. So we need to understand the pros and cons of the material, and why you might choose them. So let's talk about the pros of XPAC materials.
Yeah. So obviously with the laminate fabric, you have super high waterproofness, right? So like all the way across the product line, we see like incredibly high hydrostatic head numbers. So like from VX21 to UVX40, which like you mentioned, we don't sell anymore, unfortunately, RIP, they all have a 200 plus PSI test rating for hydrostatic head. And hydrostatic head is basically, think of taking like a dish of water, right? A bowl of water, and then putting your fabric on top of that and then like clamping it down so that it's a watertight seal, and then pumping that bowl full of air until it gets to a certain pressure, right?
Gotcha.
So the pressure is pushing that water up through the fabric. And as soon as you start seeing like three droplets of water on the face of the fabric, that's when the test ends. So imagine pumping that, you know, bowl with 200 pounds per square inch of air. Like, that's an incredible amount of water.
Do you happen to know like what other PSI test results are? Like what comparable materials would?
So for a lot of like the challenge laminates, they're in the same range, just because like with that polyester film layer. Sure.
That like does everything.
It's pretty much waterproof.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. So hydrostatic head rating, super high, which means very waterproof, and at least no moisture is going to penetrate the fabric as long as you get your stitch right.
Yeah.
Waterproofness and durability and weight and things like that are all things that come to mind for like talking about what makes a fabric unique. just briefly touching on durability. Are durability numbers for XPAC similar, lower than, higher than? Like, what do they look like compared to other similar materials?
Yeah, they're, I would say they're online with, yeah, you know, other similar weight fabrics. So like for something like VX21, you're looking at 500 cycles on that specific ASTM standard.
That's the sandpaper weighted down, rubbing the material thing.
Yeah. So basically you have a piece of sandpaper, put weights on it on top of the fabric, and then it goes around in circles and it's really loud. And then you count how many rotations it takes to get like a hole abraded all the way through that material.
Gotcha. I just got a really good idea for a reel.
Yeah.
Yeah. We should do, people reenacting what the ASTM fabric testing tests are like.
Dude, that'd be wild. So you just had somebody like standing on top of a piece of sandpaper, like shuffling around on.
Yeah. So I'm imagining they're like, this is what the ASTM 507349, whatever, I don't know the numbers. But this is the ASTM standard for abrasion resistance. And somebody holds fabric and somebody walks up with sandpaper and is just like,
10 million years later.
Exactly. So yeah, that way people can understand what the test results are. Yeah. Customer education, dude. You got to be on this stuff.
That's a great idea. That's why you're the marketing guy and I'm not.
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty ridiculously good real idea. Nobody else take it. I mean, by the time this comes out, we could have, whatever. Not the point. Let's talk about other things that make XPAC unique. Laminate fabrics have to be laminated. It's in the word. It makes sense. But lamination is also one of the most difficult things to get right for materials. What can you say about DP and XPAC and how they do their lamination?
So Dimension Poly, and this is, I'm kind of paraphrasing this all from the episode that we did with Taylor North. I think it was like episode 9.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It was a while ago, but essentially Dimension Polyant was a bunch of guys that like really love sailing, and they got together to start making sailcloth in 1966. So that's like
that was probably, Jason was probably like 10 or so by then.
No, he was at least.
He was already in college in 66.
He already had gray hair by then. Definitely. But yeah, so I mean, more than 50 years ago, right? Like, so they've been doing this for a long time.
Yeah.
They have a lot of experience with laminating materials and I'm sure like their R&D department have, who knows what they've laminated, like who knows what types of fabrics they've laminated. So they have a really good history with lamination.
Yeah. There's gotta be some, this is not the topic of the episode, maybe this is a different episode, but obviously everyone notices a correlation between sailcloth and outdoor materials. And I guess that makes a lot of sense. That sailcloth, it needs to be extremely strong, completely water resistant, UV resistant, packable, lightweight, has all these attributes that a lot of outdoor materials also have to have. But the big difference is that they undergo a lot of water exposure, not just some rain, which means a lamination, you can't just have a woven fabric, or so it's not going to actually catch wind. So that's kind of interesting. We should dive into that sometime, like really talk about with the sailmaker and kind of understand that more.
I mean, there's also a huge difference in forces applied to the fabric.
Like, yeah, that's true.
A sail, I mean, I don't even know how much force a, you know, 30 mile per hour wind is exerting on that fabric. Like, that's crazy.
Okay, let's talk about something that you teed up earlier and also something that a lot of people don't know about XPAC and a lot of reasons that people are looking at other materials, which is the kind of the story around their environmental focus. Yep. We did a whole video on this, which we will link in the description, but it's also on our YouTube page, which is XPAC is climate neutral in their production. I know neither of us are environmental engineers, so we probably can't talk to this a ton, but one, why do you think this is something that people don't notice about XPAC, and is this, would you say this is equivalent to how other companies are talking about their environmental story?
Yeah. So I'm, like you said, not any kind of environmental engineer. I'm just going off of conversations that I've had with Taylor about when they were kind of getting to this point, when they were getting to a fully climate neutral production facility and all that. He was talking about how the certifying association or company that you know did this or oversaw this, they went down to like the granular level of taking into account how much emissions it takes for every employee to drive from their their home of record to the office, right? So when they say that they're climate neutral, it's taking into even that level of detail into consideration. So the, you know, everything that they do to produce their fabrics is somehow offsetting all of the negative impacts that, you know, just their employees are having on the environment by driving to the office. So it's definitely like on a much deeper scale than, you know, having just a recycled material, which is a great thing also, but it's like a different scale, I would say.
Yeah, it's a great point. It also brings up, kind of reminds me of the Dyneema episode, or the episode when I talked to the people at Dyneema about their bio-based thing. And I guess what makes me really happy, this is one of my takeaways when talking about all of this, is how I love how the industry, and specifically each of the big three companies being Expat, Challenge, Dyneema, are taking their own approaches at finding more sustainable ways to produce their materials.
Yeah.
Because I don't know enough, you know, tell me otherwise if any of you listeners actually know. But like, I don't know enough to know if any one of those ways is more clean than the other at all, or the best way or anything. But I appreciate that pretty much any material that I want to go grab here, every one of those has many, many people behind that material trying to figure out how they can make the material in the most environmentally friendly way.
Yeah.
That makes me really stoked that we can go to the Ox line and basically just close our eyes and stab at a fabric, and it's going to be a fantastic performance, great color, and environmentally friendly.
Yeah. And I mean, that being said, even it's like when you start looking at recycled products also, right? Like the RX line, all of the woven parts of that fabric, mm-hmm. the woven face, and then the X-ply, those are all woven from fully recycled fibers also. So yeah, it's cool that there are a lot of manufacturers that are moving more towards environmentally friendly options, especially in the textile industry.
I do want to give one more caveat to this conversation, just because it can't be stressed enough. This is not a paid ad for anyone, and this is not a paid ad against anyone. We carry all these materials because we actually believe in what they do and how they perform. This is not anti any material or super pro any material. We just haven't talked about Expat that much. We've noticed this industry trend, and we're here to help makers and companies figure out how to get the most out of the materials. Not crapping on anybody. Felt weird to say, but I didn't want to say the word. And also not necessarily saying that like there's one of the best ones. Just got to make that abundantly clear before we go on. All right. One of the last really cool selling features about Expat materials is that we offer, they're one of the materials that we offer the most variants to print on. So let's talk about our outdoor ink options here.
Yeah. We print on 4 Expat materials. Those are VX07, V15, VX15, and V21 RS. And those the two options that are just Vs, so the V15 and V21 RS, those are essentially very similar in weight to their counterparts. They just don't have the X-ply, which we kind of talked about earlier with Carter and all that stuff.
Yeah. For anyone that doesn't know about our outdoor ink program, and even if you do, keep in mind that this means, I just shook the table. Sorry, everybody on YouTube. What this means being available in outdoor ink is that you can access any one of our 1260 colors through the RGB color map. You can upload a print and get anything printed onto them. You can choose any of our preloaded patterns on the custom design tool. The options are quite literally infinite. So if you've ever looked at Expat colors and been like, man, I like EcoPack colors more, but I really want Expat for this reason, you can do that. Is it more? Yes, it is a little bit more expensive.
But that's the cost of fully customized fabric.
Yeah. Like if you want a color that only you can choose, then you somewhat have to pay for that as well. Yeah. So check that out. Price-wise, where does Expat line up with other laminates?
I would say it's in the same ballpark. So if you're looking at something like EcoPack EPX 200, that's $11 per half yard. And then like VX21 is like $14.25 per half yard. So
gotcha. Yes,
a little more expensive, but.
So on like that lower end of middle side of laminates, where like your ultras and DCFs are going to be like over $20 per half yard. And then, you know, some other things might be in like the less than $10 range. So right in there.
Yep.
It's a good reminder. Last thing I want to talk about as we wrap up this expat conversation is discuss how to get the most out of your materials. So let's say an MYOG or a company has purchased some expat and they want to make their product line or their custom project out of an expat material. Let's talk about some best uses, things like handling, thread and needle, stitch type, finishing techniques, things like that, just to help the hands-on, the sewing part now.
Yeah.
So expat is known for curling really bad.
Yeah.
If you want to learn, why that is, go listen to the episode with Taylor, and he explains that in depth and how it does like with the environment and stuff. But what's the best way to store your expat material?
Definitely on a roll. Expat, like a lot of other laminates, it creases pretty badly. So if you want to store it so that you get the most longevity out of it for the future, we recommend storing it on a roll so that you don't have like random creases in the middle of your project. Then as far as like, you know, thread and needle type, stuff like that, for almost all laminates, we recommend using a sharp needle rather than a universal works too, but a sharp is just better at getting through the that laminate.
That reminds me, we need to change our needle in the makerspace. I haven't done that recently.
I think I changed it like 2 days ago.
Oh, thank you. I'm glad you exist.
me too. And then as far as thread goes, again, that's going to depend on the weight of the fabric that you're using. But Mara 70 is, or Mara 70.
You're a Mara guy?
I think so.
You say Mara?
I guess so.
Guterman Mara.
Mara 70. Mara 70?
I've always been a Mara guy.
Hmm. Wonder what our listeners are. Wonder if they're Mara or Maras.
I just think very German, like Guterman Mara, you know, like something pretty thick.
Yeah.
Anyway. I'm not sure if they're German either, but Mara 70.
All right, Mara 70. Yeah, sharp needle. Stitch type. I mean, for the most part, laminates are not stretchy in any way. So that straight stitch is probably going to be your best bet.
Because it is a laminate, would you go wider stitch length?
Yep, definitely would recommend using a longer stitch length.
Again, think of it like a perforation, less holes, less likely to rip.
Yeah.
Not that it's going to rip anyway, but also less likely to let water in.
Yeah.
Finishing, any tips for binding and taping?
We kind of touched on this earlier, but the film-backed variants, as well as things like DCF that have film on both sides, you can tape those, which is always a great option. That just helps to stabilize the stitch and fill in those holes and provide more strength to the seam. But if it's not a film-backed variant, then you can always bind. You can use bias tape. You can do a hem that encases the raw edge. There's a lot of different options.
So I just thought about this, and this is not a question I know the answer to, but for when working with laminates, is there any reason not to do something like a flat filled seam or a French seam or something like that? Like, does it help to have the grill grain kind of cover that stitch instead of just use more material?
I don't think there's any advantage to using
one
over the other than like if you have a seam where you're trying to reduce bulk, then binding would definitely reduce the bulk. Cause when you're doing like a flat filled seam, you're going to have like
tons of
layers of that fabric in there.
The benefit for me to not doing a flat filled seam or something like that is I don't have to account for the seam allowance in my math. Cause that's never a good time.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, Isaac, that just about wraps it up for our conversation regarding expat. Is there anything else that you would kind of say to this whole conversation about, why it feels like people have left expat, why we think that they should come back to expat, and also just why we think they should utilize all the materials that we have in our catalog?
I mean, I think that's one of my favorite parts about being a DIYer is having all of these options available to us and then being able to objectively look at each one and say, okay, well, this is the project that I have. These are the attributes that I want it to provide me. And then based on that, choosing the fabric that best suits your need, you know. Obviously price is for most people a consideration in that. So yeah, it's just good to know about all these different fabrics and to know what they're capable of.
Yeah. One other thing, last thing I want to talk about is a lot of people mention that expat doesn't have like an ultralight material variant, something to actually compare with Ultra 100 or 292 DCF. And I was doing some research, and I know we've gotten it in-house, but I want to make sure it's kind of like a public thing before you mentioned it, which is their like Project 85 material. You've seen that one and worked with it a little bit, I think.
Yeah.
What do you know about it, and kind of what do you think that's going to look like?
Yeah, I've worked with it a little bit. Taylor sent us some sample yardage of it a while ago. And it's definitely a very interesting fabric. The newer samples that I saw had kind of like the face of it is a woven face, but then it was almost like they increased the adhesive. So it kind of like squeezed through the weave of the fabric, and it almost felt like it was like you could kind of scratch it on the surface. Like not scratch it off, but it was like a hard surface.
Gotcha.
So it's definitely an interesting material, and I'm pretty sure I want to say it's like around the 292 weight. I think it's in the same ballpark.
So yeah, I mean the Project 85 means it's 85 grams per square meter. So that's like
it's like 2.5
okay.
ounces per square yard. I didn't do that in my head. I looked it up. I don't think I'm a savant or anything.
The other interesting thing about that material is that it's a ultra PE face as well. So yeah, interesting stuff there. We'll see, you know, if this is a viable material that continues to be developed, and I don't know where we are with it getting that product onboarded, but you could expect to see it from us eventually if that's where things go and depending on how things go with that material. To wrap this episode up, Isaac, I want to play a little bit of game with you, an X-Pac themed game, just in this day of talking about X-Pac materials.
Dude, that's exactly what I want to end my Friday.
I don't see why you wouldn't. Yeah. What better way could you do this? Otherwise, you'd just be working on customer projects or something.
Yeah.
This game is called Make, Stash, or Trash. The idea is I'm going to give you a project, three materials. I hold four. Three materials. You have to choose one to make the project with, one to stash, save for any day, and one you have to say, I've worked with that a lot. I don't want that one.
Gotcha.
Got it?
I got it.
Any questions?
I don't think so.
Okay. Here you go. Number one, your project is a dog harness.
A dog harness.
And your three options are RX30, 210D HDPE gridstop, or 210D Robic. I wrote 21,000 Robic. I mean 210D Robic.
Oh, goodness. What was the first option again?
Yeah. RX30.
RX30. Okay. Okay, so considering I don't want my dog to overheat and potentially die, I'm probably not going to use like the fully waterproof option for this one. So, wow. Okay, I think I'm going to stash the RX30.
Okay.
Because I'm going to use that for a more waterproof project later. 210D Grobic.
You can tell it's the end of a Friday right now. Both of us are struggling so hard with these words.
210D. No. Oh my gosh. 210D Gridstop.
Yes.
Is the next option. I'm probably going to trash it just because I've used it a lot. I'd like the color options, but yeah, I've used it a lot. And 210D Robic, haven't used a lot.
Fair.
So I'm going to use that.
Yeah, I like it. That was a secret question because I need to make a new dog harness. So I'm probably just going to take your, use that as a little bit of help.
Yeah.
All right, project number two. You need to make a climbing rope bag. You can use Ultra 100, 500E Cordura Multicam, no cheating, or X-Pac VX21.
Are we talking like alpine climbing or just like
crag.
Going just, to the crag?
Yeah, easy approach, less than a mile. Carry a couple of ropes. You can rig some gnarly sends.
Yeah. Okay, so I'm probably going to... What's the game called again? Stash, Trash, or Mash?
make, Stash, or Trash.
Make, Stash, or Trash. Okay, I'm going to make with the VX21.
Okay.
Just because I think it's a cool looking fabric, like be a cool like rope bag, whatever you want to throw in there. It's going to do all that very well. 500D Cordura Multicam while I am a sucker for camouflage and specifically multicam, I'm probably going to trash it just because I have used it a ton.
If you bring one more camo thing home, your wife will not be happy.
Not to mention, I'm all for using the lightest and the best materials for any given application, and 500D quarter is not
not that. It.
And then Ultra 100, yeah, I'm going to stash that. I would probably make, if I was making a climbing bag?
Rope bag.
If I was making a rope bag for any kind of like alpine situation or like, I don't know, longer ascents, I'd probably use Ultra 100 for that.
Yeah. All right. Project number three, you need to make a laptop bag thing. Your options are 6.5 woven melange with Dyneema, LS21, or 3.9 ounce Venom UHMWPE PU coated.
Well, as you were asking me, I had in mind that I would use light skin. So I'm going to make it with light skin simply because I think that's a cool looking fabric, especially for EDC type stuff. Just cool. Melange. I'm going to trash it. Yeah. It's just very heavy.
Approximately 6.5 ounces.
Yeah. It's like twice the weight of those other two options. Approximately.
LS21 is 6 ounces.
Is it?
Yeah.
I thought it was like... Anyways. it's heavy. It feels heavy. It looks heavy. so I'm gonna trash the melange and then stash the venom.
Good call.
3.9.
I like this. I'm just gonna double check myself.
Yeah, I guess 3.9 is not half of 6.
Light skin LS21 is 4.8 ounces. I'm not really very close to being right.
Yeah, that's closer to what I thought it was.
Yeah. Okay, good work. All right, this is a bonus project. This is the last one. You don't have to hear us any longer after this. Maybe you like this game. If you do, actually, let us know. We do try to play some games at the end of episodes to make it more fun, a little more interactive, where you can talk about the fabrics in a less technical way. So let us know what you think about this. Your fourth and final project, Isaac, the last one of the day, maybe the last one ever. Cut that out. Project number four is you need to make your wife a bag. You need to make your wife, Camila, a bag of some sort. Your three options are X50 Tactical,
okay,
Hyper D300, or 210D Robic.
What kind of bag were you?
That's up to you. I'm leaving some leverage here. You just have to make it for your wife.
Okay. X50 Tactical. Okay, so if I'm just going with like a simple like fanny pack, hip bag, small bag, I'm probably going to go with X50 Tactical in black.
Oh.
Yep, not in multi, shocked. Not in woodland, simply because Camila does love some simple color options. She likes things that are utilitarian that can go with a lot of different outfits. So I think she'd like a black fanny pack. But then if I was going to make her something wild and crazy, let's say like I don't know, wild and crazy.
Like just a wild and crazy fanny pack. Like if you were to go for a colorful option.
Okay, then yeah, Hyper D300.
Nice.
Outdoor ink specifically.
Hyper D300. So, ooh, that's actually a great point. I love that. So you'd use X50 Tactical, make, stash Hyper D300 outdoor ink, and trash 210D Robic.
Yeah.
Cool. I love it. You spread the love very nicely there. Your answers are pretty spread out amongst the brands. I like it.
Yeah.
All right. Let's shut this thing down, Isaac.
They like the Swiss.
What? Oh, neutral. Got it.
Yeah.
That makes sense. Yeah. All right. Now let's shut this thing down. All right, everybody. As always, thank you for listening. Please let us know what you think about this topic, what your take on XPAC is, what you're going to make with XPAC next, because you should. Like, comment, rate, subscribe, review. Let us know what you like and dislike. As always, thanks for watching/listening.
Stay golden, Pony Boy.